Welcome, fellow seekers of the extraordinary. Welcome to our shared quest. A quest not for a thing, but for an idea. A quest not for a place, but into deep, inner, unexplored regions of ourselves. A quest to understand how we can achieve our fullest potential by learning from others who have done or are doing exactly that. Extraordinary stories of overcoming anguish. People who have stood up to challenges with true courage. Stories that will enlighten and inspire. May we always have the courage and wisdom to learn from those who have something to teach. Join me now in Seeking the Extraordinary.
Hello, and welcome to Seeking the Extraordinary. For today's episode, our Chief Seeker of the Extraordinary, Michael Nathanson, has turned the mic over to me. I'm Nicole Steinwedel, and I'm an Associate Wealth Advisor at The Colony Group. Today's episode features an extraordinary woman from Colony. This program is sponsored by Her Wealth by Colony. Her Wealth empowers women with tools and resources they need to gain confidence and take control of their wealth. Our guest today is Lauren Ledger, a senior wealth advisor at The Colony Group. Her journey to The Colony Group is anything but ordinary, but relatable nonetheless. Please welcome the extraordinary Lauren Ledger.
Thank you, Nicole. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Oh, it's so good to meet you. And I was lucky enough to speak with you briefly before we got to formally speak. And I am so inspired by you already. So I'm thrilled that you're allowing me to interview you here and can't wait for everyone to hear your story. So as a way of launching us into the conversation, my curiosity really is around you and how you got here. So for me, it's really kind of going all the way back and thinking about what you really wanted growing up. Did you always want to be in finance?
No, I didn't. Although in retrospect, I think my brothers would say that they knew I wanted to go on finance with the fervor that I played them in Monopoly.
But oh, I love that. I love that.
I took that game seriously. But no.
As one should.
But really, finance was not on my radar screen until much later in life.
Yeah.
So thankful that this is where I've ended up. I know that I have found my calling, and I'm really grateful every day to get to go to work with the people that I do and serve the clients that I get to serve. But it's been a windy path through a lot of different trials and a lot of serendipity to get me to where I am right now.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, a lot of the best journeys are that way. So where did you kind of start? What did you want to do when you grew up or when you were in school? How did that begin?
So when I think about the journey that led me here, I think of it as three big buckets, three pillars of experience that led me to where I am. The first is that I grew up the daughter of small business owners. So when I was young, I often thought about following in their footsteps in the small business world. I then also had the opportunity to live abroad for a number of years. And so that was something that I was really passionate about and loved. And the third was that I have been very involved in nonprofit work, in charitable organizations, since I became an adult. And that has helped shape who I am and really helped shape in the future my practice as a financial advisor. But no, it has not been a direct path, but happy to be where I am right
now. Yeah. You mentioned your parents were small business owners. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and my dad ran a family business that was started by my great-grandfather.
Wow.
And my mom, when I was, I believe, 4 years old, started a toy store, opened a toy store. And that is the business that I really got to experience firsthand. That was my second family. The staff were people who I adored and was able to learn from. I did every possible job that one can do in a small business, from elementary age cutting down boxes in the storeroom to stocking the shelves. When I was old enough to be on the floor and helping customers, I am still the best gift wrapper that
one could imagine. It is my secret skill.
And I really learned a lot about customer service in that role. And that carries into my work today, that my mom was a child development specialist, and she really was very passionate about traditional toys and helping kids learn through educational play. And so this required me to know what I was talking about on the floor and to provide really top-notch service. And that's something that at the Colony Group, we still do that. And I find a lot of familiarity with kind of the mindset of those business owners.
Absolutely, 100%. And I think a large part of what we do is educating our client. So that continues in hopefully a playful way, right? Not always taking ourselves so seriously, being able to, I love that, that it was through that engagement with education and toys, traditional.
People joke that it was the best childhood imaginable, and growing up with a mom in a toy store was pretty special. And it also was hard. I mean, small business ownership is challenging. And there were a lot of moments, economic cycles, where both my parents were worried about their businesses. And I got to see that firsthand. And I got to see the challenges that people have with their personal finances, and how having someone who can be there to walk you through kind of those worries. What is keeping you up? What are the tools that we can put into place to help alleviate some of those fears?
Right.
Those are really important skills. And I wish my parents had had that when they were going through their small business ownerships, and they were very successful and good at their jobs, but it's hard work.
No, absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's important, right? The fantasy of it is what I imagined, right? Of the toy store and a kid and all the experience when you're young. But thank you for mentioning the challenges. That's important too. And what we kind of observe as children and the places we want to fill to help people in the future. And that kind of points to my next piece, which what you shared about the second pillar, which is you lived internationally. How did that come up in your life? How did you know you wanted to travel, and where did you go?
Yeah. So I studied Japanese in high school. And
amazing.
I knew that I wanted to study it in college. And so when I was doing my college searches, I looked for programs that were at good schools, but also had good Japanese programs. And I ended up at Washington University in St. Louis. And started studying Japanese and worked so hard. I am such a hard worker, and I just was bad at it. I was bad at it.
I find it hard to believe you'd be bad at anything,
It was not my skill set. And so I went through for 2 years and studied more hours than I can even express to you. And then pivoted and started studying political science. I did a bunch of math in there. I did some psychology, East Asian studies. And then when I graduated, I decided that it wasn't that I needed to give up Japanese. It's that that path wasn't the right way for me to go. And so I applied to the Japan Exchange and Teaching Program, the JET program, in Japan, and was accepted into the program and moved to Shizuoka, Japan, and taught English for a year, which was a miraculous and life-changing experience. I met friends there from all over the world who I still travel with, and our kids know one another.
Oh, I love that.
A really important and hard experience, again, that I had never been out of the country before I moved to Japan. And that was, there was a lot of culture shock. And there were days when I had a mantra of doing one thing a day that terrified me. And sometimes that was just going to the post office.
Yeah, I understand.
that I could sleep well at night knowing that I had pushed my way through.
Wow.
And sometimes it didn't work as well as I wanted it to. I remember one experience of needing to go get a passport picture taken and got directions from a coworker for where to do this. They said it was a little building kind of down this alley. And I ended up walking into some woman's living room and saying, please take my picture.
Wait. Because the directions had brought you to the wrong place.
The directions were wrong, or I interpreted them wrong is probably a more accurate description of what happened. So it
was, oh, it's so fun, though.
Right. So I came away with good stories.
Yeah.
And a lot of growth and resilience to try new things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So after Japan, I moved to Boston for a time and dipped my feet into the finance world. And I'm sure we'll cover that in a minute. But about 5 years later, I moved to China with my husband and lived in Shanghai for 3.5 years. And again, met miraculous people. I gave birth to my oldest kid in Shanghai.
In China.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. How was that experience? Wow.
It was fine.
I'm sure it was a lot of things.
Right. And I went in saying that they have a lot of babies in China. So I'm sure.
So what could be
fine? What could go wrong? And
it was
a harder experience than I had been anticipating. But gives my now 16-year-old some really good stories about where it's from. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, and seeing a pattern that is so wonderful, which is every time that you face something, and even if it's different than what you want, it may have been hard, but you shine through, which is unbelievably cool and inspiring to me as I'm hearing you talk about it. And it may not even have been what you expected, but you rose to the occasion. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it's fun when we talk hindsight and see it from this angle. And you have this wonderful 16-year-old who's proof of that. But I'm just ever impressed whenever we're talking. So thank you. Okay. So just in the interest of moving through these pieces that you shared, these three big pillars, come to the piece about nonprofit work and how that came into your life. I'm sure it was always a part of your life, but how does that manifest itself for you as you started traveling and came home?
What you just said was a kind compliment, and one that I don't know that I always move through these hard things with as much grace as you're giving me credit for here. But one thing that I have taken upon myself is in these moments of non-clarity about the next right move, taking a pause and volunteering and getting involved with nonprofit work has been a tool that I have employed a number of times. So that's actually what I did when I got to China. I was feeling a little lost. My husband and I had sought out this transfer, and it was through his job. And so I was there and not someone who really lives well into a There was a mentality among some women in China of the ladies who lunch, who go out and it's a wonderful experience. It's not for me. And so I needed to be challenged and to feel like I was giving back to this country that was hosting me for 3.5 years. And so I got involved in nonprofit work when I was there, and I found a community that really resonated with me. When I moved home, I did the same thing and tried and volunteered for a number of organizations. And this is really what has given me probably the best experience for my job today, because philanthropy is so applicable to our client base and is so important to the people we work with that.
Yeah.
I learned a lot of things in this time period. I worked with a group called Community Consulting Teams, which takes folks with MBAs and puts them on teams to help nonprofits a consulting capacity. And I learned how to study 990 reports and report back about how nonprofits are doing. Really a lot of wonderful skills and hopefully helpful to the nonprofits as well.
Yes.
And then at a moment when I was looking for a bit more of a challenge, I happened across an opportunity to really get involved in a much deeper way in my own community. So the story here is that I stopped by the front desk of my kids' elementary school and I asked the administrative assistant if there was anything she needed help with, because I knew that this school served a really diverse population of students from a lot of different economic backgrounds and that she was a fighter. She would find help for every single student who needed help in this school.
You knew that about her. I'm sorry to interrupt you. You knew that about her previously. You'd already clocked that.
I feel like everyone in the community knew that about her. She was a powerhouse and continued to be a powerhouse. And she said, yes, help me figure out how to make sure that kids who receive free and reduced price lunch during the school year still have enough to eat during the summer vacations. And this was a light bulb moment of saying, well, of course, this is an issue. Why had I never, ever realized this was an issue before?
Well, I don't know if you didn't realize it was an issue, but someone highlighted it because you were not doing anything else beforehand, obviously. But the fact that you took the ball and ran with it is, I think, why you're unique among people. Some people would just contribute and walk away. But what did you do? What did you do? Tell everyone.
Yeah. So I was looking for a challenge. I wanted to be involved. And there are moments now where I would be the person who would contribute and say thank you and probably do something else. The place I was there was that I wanted to help and get my hands dirty. And so I got together with a few other people who wanted to help with the same issue. And we figured out how to make lunches, going to Costco and making lunches. And we put the word out to our networks and all of a sudden had more money than we knew how to spend on these lunches. And we made them and we expanded our scope and our service. So we started out that summer and we then adapted and said, they also need food on the weekends. How can we figure out how to send fresh produce home with all of our families? Wow. When school started again, how can we make sure that snacks are available in every single classroom so that kids are not hungry during the school day when they're supposed to be learning? How can we bring our community together? Let's have a community meal. And so this real grassroots organization took shape and it kept growing and changing and we kept trying new things. And it was a joy to be part of. And the organization, we merged with another organization about 2 or 3 years after we started, which allowed us to grow even faster and to hire staff members. And the organization now has a brand new, gorgeous headquarters and 6 staff and serves about 12,000 pounds a week go out and about 12,000 pounds of food a week go out to families in our area. And I'm really proud of the organization, really thankful for the organization, because I was able to go through so many different roles in this experience. So going from working very hands-on, giving out food, acting as executive director, and then really switching to more of a board role and doing financial oversight and being the board chair for a number of years. It gave me so much more than I gave it. And so much of that is then played so beautifully into what I'm passionate about in my
work. Wow. Yeah, I absolutely understand. And that's a perfect segue into my next question, which is, yes, it's about your work now and how you came to the Colony Group. And all those three big pillars you talked about, cornerstones in your experience, almost with this last one, like you created a business, it's a nonprofit, but you literally created a successful from nothing. You did that in those different steps. You got to see all the pieces that our clients might need help with. So tell us about your way to Colony Group, how that came about.
So this story goes back to right when I moved home from Japan. Mm-hmm. And I needed a job and knew no one in Boston except the person I was going to marry later. And it was right after the dot-com bubble burst. And so it was not a great job market. I went to a headhunter who said, you're good at math. Let me send you to a company called Independence Investments. And Independence Investments was a subsidiary of John Hancock, an institutional asset manager. And it was a brilliant introduction to the world of finance. And the company was about 150 people when I joined. And that size allowed me to try a lot of different roles there. So I tried relationship management and client service and human resources, and it allowed me to work with a lot of different people. And so two of the people that I worked with when I was there was Mimi Cooper, who was the chief operating officer, and Mark Latman, who was the CEO of the company. And I worked for Mimi for a short period of time and helped with some projects. Got to know them during that time. Independence also offered an educational stipend. So they helped me pay to do an MBA in the evening.
Right.
So I did my MBA at Boston University at night. Never, ever pass up free education is a good rule in life.
Yes.
And during that time, I discovered that I really loved finance, but the institutional world was not my calling. I was wanting to work with people and to see how finance could impact them. And so I thought about personal financial advising and didn't see a clear path. And I did see a clear path to go to China. So that's where that journey started. And during the time in China and then starting and working with nonprofits, I always kind of had in my mind that a perfect job for me would be as a financial advisor. But as the primary parent at home for little kids, it was hard for me to quite figure out what that path was going to look like if I wanted to pursue it.
Interesting. Yeah. I think a lot of women face that. How do you hold space for being a full-time mom and wanting to work in a new career, especially in a new career, like take it in another direction?
Exactly.
How did you navigate that?
I don't have great advice for people as a whole because I really was so lucky in the way that I came about this. So Mark Latman and Mimi Cooper had gone off, had left the institutional world and started their own registered investment advisory firm called Cooper Latman Financial. They had grown the business. They were really focused on helping folks who in 2008, 2009 were asking themselves, do we still have the resources to retire after the financial crisis at hand? And they had started a business that they loved and were really good at, very client focused, grown the business, and then in 2016 decided that they wanted to add a third advisor to the business. And they knew we had kept track of one another a bit through mutual friends. And so they gave me a call and asked me if I was interested in coming to work for them. And again, it could not be luckier to do this, but this gave me a chance to really learn from them and continue on with this company that they had built, which was very planning focused. We as a team really believe in keeping the investments simple, but really going very deep on the planning, knowing what our clients' goals and values are and how their financial plan can support those goals and values. And so I did my Series 65 right away and then went and started studying for my CFP and went through those courses, passed the CFP. And I was hooked. I mean, it was just such a wonderful match for what I'm passionate about and what I hope and think I'm good at and serve my clients well. And we grew the business. We hired a fourth advisor as our business kept growing, Trey Tremblay, who is a little younger than I am, but just a brilliant advisor, really wise beyond his years, very, again, client focused and a really great partner to work with for me on our team. And we then started talking a little bit more about the future and what are the next steps for the company was going to be. And Mark and Mimi knew that they wanted to keep working for as long as possible, but that they wanted our clients to have as long of a runway as possible with their advisors. And Mark and Mimi were thinking maybe we will want to retire in 8 years, but we want our clients to have an 80-year runway with their advisor. What kind of company do we need to either create or merge with to give them those opportunities? And we talked as a team for a while about whether we wanted to grow from within, if I wanted to buy into the partnership. And what I decided was that I really like teamwork a lot. I wanted a bigger team, and I know the challenges firsthand of the small business ownership. So, we started looking for good partners, and we spoke to a few firms, and then we had lunch with Michael Nathanson, and really talked a lot about shared values and culture. And Mark and Mimi had been one of the original, had a buy-sell agreement with Colony from the very beginning, so that if they were hit by a bus, there was an option for their clients to have the next advisor set up. But that hadn't been initiated and that wasn't set in stone. But after that lunch with Michael Nathanson, I think all of us knew that Colony was the right partner for us, that we so appreciated the people and the mentality that Colony brings and the really deep bench of resources. So the fact that there is a spectacular tax team and that there are experts around if we have a client who is going to sell a business or who needs a family office service, that it really seemed to be the right fit for our team. And we merged with them about a year ago and really thrilled to be part of the Colony family now and love the folks that I have met and that I get to work with and feel like we're serving our clients even better with this.
Good. So glad to hear it. No, and Colony is lucky to have you. I feel like it's adding top talent to our bench. You know what I mean? It's a mutually beneficial relationship. And also, I love what you're saying about you guys sitting down and starting to think about it. That's like your therapist having a therapist. You guys are doing planning for the business. That kind of planning is so important in our business, right? So that the younger generation of advisors know and care for the existing clients, that there's an ability to plan that runway for the client base in a way that feels seamless to the clients. And so I'm so glad you brought that up because we might do very deep planning for the clients, but we also are proud of the way that we plan internally to take care of the structure so it feels supported for a long sort of in perpetuity, as opposed to like in the individual career, which is how you let people grow. So I'm glad you mentioned that. It's a really good point.
Yeah, and it's true. And I was so lucky to work with folks who really prioritized that for not just our clients, but for me and for Trey and our careers.
Yeah.
Because it's not always that way, but this has been such a gift to have have this runway ahead of me as well as I go forward.
Good. You deserve it. I'm so happy for you. And I love what you share about being lucky. I agree that there's some beautiful lucky moments that have happened, but I want to just challenge you and say, no, I think that it's that luck thing they say, right? It's where opportunity and preparation meet. Your open-heartedness, your willingness to reach out to community wherever you are, the ability that you've shown to do hard things or face the unknown with a bit of kind of open pause, not just I'm going to charge ahead and insist, is exemplary and something that I take a lot of comfort in my own journey. So thank you for sharing it.
Thanks.
Truly, truly, you're exceptional. I kind of would love to know if you're willing to share, well, two things. One, what do you love to do outside of work? Anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to share that gives you joy, that gives you balance in this very incredible work ethic? Or is it that it's so passionate for you that kind of that's where you put your focus? What are your other interests?
So I have a lot of focus with my 16-year-old son, who is a junior in high school, and my 13-year-old son, who's in eighth grade.
And I bet they take a lot of energy, yes.
They do, but it's so fun. They're at an age where they're really funny and really interesting, and I enjoy spending time with them, and they mostly still like me, I think.
I get it. Yep.
I feel good about that. So a lot of my free time is devoted to right now college tours and thinking about what those next steps are, which makes me, it's increasing my advisory practice, because it's one thing to talk about educational planning and it's another thing to really sit with it as a parent and when it goes about that.
It kind of highlights something that I've noticed in you already, but it's what you've done for your clients is you have a deeper empathy for them because you're literally going through it in your own family. So you can completely relate to what families are going through. And it's a huge milestone for families and for planning.
I would say that empathy is one of the things that I try to bring to my advisory practice more than perhaps anything else. It's meeting people where they are. We often talk about the fact that there is a financial answer and an emotional answer to most questions that our clients ask, in that there is not one right answer to those questions often. So an easy example would be when interest rates were really low, if people should take out a mortgage on a new house or not. And the financial answer, if you have a 2.5% mortgage, is yes, you should have a mortgage. The emotional answer may be fear of debt and liabilities and going into retirement with that big mortgage on their balance sheet. That may not be the emotional answer for them. And so really taking time to understand goals and motivations and what is important to people is a really important and essential part of my practice. I also really love working with women. I had an experience. My dad sold his business when I was in graduate school, and they hired a financial advisor. And I went to one of those meetings with my parents, and I sat there and listened to this advisor who didn't talk about any planning whatsoever and just talked about the investments and used so much jargon about them. And my mom walked away from this meeting. My mother, who is brilliant and a business owner and knows what she's talking about, she walked away from this meeting saying, I don't understand finance. And I find that often in working with couples, that there's one person who is more native to this language and to this experience. And often in heterosexual couples, it's the woman who feels like she doesn't understand as well. And I often say that if someone leaves one of my meetings not understanding something, that is not at all the fault of the client. That is always my fault. That is always my fault for not explaining things in a different way. So one of my big goals is to make sure that everyone we meet with understands what we're talking about. We have broken it down or made it more complex for people who are looking for more complexity in what they're doing.
There are clients who want that. Yes,
exactly. Yes. But really getting back to meeting people where they are with how they want to incorporate finance as part of their world, because we have this quote that we use often in talking about this from Paul Auster that says, money, of course, is never just money. It's always something else, and it's always something more, and it always has the last word. And
ooh, I've never heard that before. I like the last bit.
Ooh.
Killer.
Well, it takes money is part of what we talk about, and it touches all the parts of our lives. And it's really important to understand where clients are coming from and what's important as we frame those conversations.
Their relationship to money, because that's it. And if I look at your life and your history, the way that you study language, I feel that finance is a language, and your interpretation of it and the way you can give that clearly to the client lets you get out of the way a bit so they can have their own relationship to their understanding of money. And we empower people to do that with every fiber of our being so that they never have that experience, right? Of walking out and being like, I don't know. Because I wouldn't say it's your fault ever, but it's our responsibility to give that as much clarity and to reflect back to them. And like you said, where they are, but also where they can go when they're like renewed foundation. They're on solid ground with what they understand. You helped me clarify it. So thank you.
But teamwork.
And I just think, teamwork, exactly. Collaboration. I love collaboration. Great. You've been so lovely to speak to. I wanted to know what you wanted to do next. And it sounds like you've kind of led us there. You may not have a specific piece to share, but one thing a goal or a dream coming that you still want to see come true, a mountain you want to climb. I'd love to hear that. And then I'll stop bugging you.
So personally, I would actually love to climb more mountains. That hiking is something that I...
I didn't think it on purpose. I love that.
Good addition there. Professionally, you know, what I'm really passionate about right now is working with multi-generation families, especially around philanthropic giving.
Perfect. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
To kind of bring all these things together, all my experiences together, but to sit down with families to be really purposeful about their philanthropic visions. This is not a goal for all families, but for families where this is an important part of their overall family values, it is often helpful to have a third party to help lead people through visioning exercises and helping people come up with their mission statement for their philanthropic giving, and to have those family meetings to check in on how they're doing. So that is a passion, I'd say maybe a new passion of mine that is bringing together a lot of my old passions.
Yes, love it.
That I would say is one of my goals going forward.
Beautiful. And that can be such a family building activity too, to talk about legacy as a family. So you're, giving such a gift by holding space like that. I'm excited to see what you do. Well, you have been such an inspiring, energizing person to speak to. I'm so grateful that you took the time to be here with us today. Thank you so very much. And I can't wait to hear what happens next.
Thank you. It has been a pleasure speaking with you.
And that is the extraordinary Lauren Ledger. Thank you again, Lauren. I'll end today's show with important themes that are reflected through Lauren's journey. The importance of being courageous, taking on new challenges, saying yes, and so much more. Thank you again to our sponsor today, Her Wealth by Colony. To learn more, visit thecolonygroup.com. You can also follow The Colony Group on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Thank you for tuning in today's episode. I'm Nicole Steinwedel, and I look forward to joining you all again soon.